You know, Jesus had unbelievable knowledge of what was going on in Judas's soul at that moment, and this caused him terrible anguish. Jesus felt within himself all the agony, all the torments of his disciple Judas, and he even shared the pain of Judas' dark night of the soul. When we listen to the saints, they always said that the most painful part of Jesus' entire passion was the affair with Judas. And this caused his master more anguish than his slow death nailed to the cross. And we cannot forget that Jesus' capacity for suffering was proportional to his capacity for love, like us, you know. In other words, it was an infinite capacity for suffering. And Jesus loved Judas so much. And there is no fatalism in the gospel. Not one single prophecy is predetermined. Wherever there is an opportunity for the evil one, there is also an opportunity to say no to him. At this point of the story, it is still not too late for Judas. Jesus is going to keep on reaching out to him in mercy and compassion. And the way out for Judas, the path that still lies open before him, is the way of humility and repentance. While Judas is losing himself in the darkness, Jesus is starting down what we call the Via Dolorosa, the sorrowful way, that leads to his agony because of all the Judases of this world. The dark prison of Judas's heart grows deeper and blacker by the minute. His passion drives him. His sin has taken him over. He has unplugged himself from Jesus. He's actually disconnected from him. He has cut out the power of his Lord's voice, calling to him that it is still not too late to turn back. And what is this voice of Jesus saying? Jesus prays. He's physically separated now from Judas. He's awaiting another encounter with him on the Mount of Olives. And of the two, Jesus and Judas, one goes to the Mount of Olives to confront hell and to win over it, to love those who suffer hell in this world and to bring them back from captivity. But what is Judas doing? He's creating hell, creating his own hell. Jesus prays his priestly prayer to the Father.
Father, I am not asking on behalf of the world, but on behalf of those you gave me, because they are yours. I am not asking you to take them out of the world, but I ask you to protect them from the evil one.
We all know that there is an ongoing struggle between divine mercy, extreme love who saves, and the evil one, who lead souls to destruction. And right now, at this point of the story, the struggle is at a fevered pitch. It is the hour of darkness. Jesus and Judas meet for the last time in the flesh. We see Judas, he arrives in the garden. He has brought along reinforcement, as if he needed extra troops to arrest the lamb. What need is there for clubs and swords to arrest someone who lets himself be led like a lamb to slaughter? Jesus has just gone through his agony in the garden, and it must have shown on his face, because Judas is shocked when he sees him. Jesus twice asks him,
"Who is it you want?"
Maybe Judas does not even recognize him. What could Jesus' face have looked like after his agony? St. Luke tells us that his sweat was like big drops of blood dripping onto the ground. Judas peers at Jesus' face. And what does he see? He sees a bloody face. He sees the blood of the Lamb. He goes up close to Jesus and he kisses his bleeding face. You know, it is well known that at that time in the Jewish world and in the East in general, there were several ways people kissed each other, on the head, on the hands, on the feet. And it is quite probable that Judas kissed Jesus on the mouth. Well, in Eastern tradition, we've got to know that a kiss on the mouth was a sign of utter trust. It was actually the sealing of a covenant. If one had business dealings with someone else, the sign that the parties were in agreement and trusted one another was a kiss on the mouth. So this kiss on the mouth of Jesus from Judas was actually a twofold betrayal. When Judas kissed Jesus, he kissed his blood. So from that point on, Judas' lips bore the mark of the blood of the Lamb. And Judas is the only person in all of history whom we know to have drunk the blood of Christ right on Jesus' body. We can, of course, imagine that Mary kissed the holy wounds of her son after his death, but in the Gospel, only Judas is mentioned. It's possible that Judas did not receive communion at the Last Supper. The fathers of the Church are divided on this point. But if indeed he did not, Jesus offered to him alone that very special communion in his blood. How could this blood not have annihilated the enemy who had invaded Judas' heart? The blood of the Lamb, this redemptive blood, was in his very mouth. It's incredible what humility Jesus showed in the way he gave himself. When he gave his blood with a kiss, he gave his soul to Judas. You know, we read in the Bible that the blood is the life. It's in Deuteronomy. How could this soul not have brought Judas' soul back to his Lord? But no, Judas instead hardens his heart even more. Yet, even now, Jesus continues to hope. He'll try something else. For as long as there is life, there is hope. And at this point, Jesus turned to Judas, who had just betrayed him, and uses that extraordinary word, friend, that is, you whom I love. To the kiss of betrayal, Jesus responds with love. And here he gives us an example, a beautiful example that we've got to follow.
Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you.
But Judas refuses this lifeline that is thrown out to him. He goes ahead. He digs himself in further. And in a certain way, we can say that he's pleased. He has accomplished his plan. He had been a long time in the making. He had wanted to have Jesus arrested. And now he's done it. And it is his hour of triumph. Jesus is taken into custody. His hands are now bound. What a sublime irony that the one who precisely came to free us from our bonds is now put into chains. Judas has won. But after Jesus is tried and condemned, Judas will see that he has won a dismal victory. At this point now, Judas climbs down the Mount of Olives. He crosses the stream called Kedron, and then he hesitates. What has he really gained? He realized that this victory of his is empty, meaningless, like chaff in the wind. These 30 pieces of silver in his pocket won't make him happy. It's nothing. He's gone to a great deal of trouble for nothing. So he roams and wanders about, spying out what is going on with his former master. And then he realizes that he has betrayed an innocent man, that he has handed over innocent blood. He feels stricken with remorse, and he suffers deeply in his soul. Well, he had belonged to the group of the apostles. He had been one of the chosen ones. He, Judas, one of the 12, as they call him in the Gospel. And you know, when one has been chosen, it's no longer possible for him to live as if this had never been so. Being chosen leaves an indelible mark on the soul. The call of God is never revoked. When one has tasted the intense sweetness of such a love, one never forgets. One is marked, and forever. Judas is marked.